Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Life Behind Home Plate podcast. I am your host, John, and I am so excited that you are joining me this week. Now, for those of you who don't know me, I am the vice president for the Evergreen Baseball Umpires Association based out of Vancouver, Washington. For those who are not familiar with the Northwest, Vancouver, Washington is right next to Portland, Oregon. We're not in Canada, but a lot of people think that we are. So this week, we are going to talk about the first week of the season as it has begun here in Southern Washington. The title of this podcast tells you everything you need to know. The title is Lessons from the First Week, Blowouts, Ejections, and Managing the Game. So the first part of this podcast, I'm just going to give you a review of my first week. Things that I think I did really well, things that I think I can improve on, and ways that I'm trying to make sure that I am ready for the upcoming weeks. The second part of the podcast is going to be talking about the Rule 3.4 in the National Federation, where it's charged conferences, because I had more questions, y'all, about charged conferences last week. So I want to take a moment, break it down for you guys, so that we as high school umpires are adjudicating the rule properly. That's why we're there. We are there to adjudicate the rule properly. So let's make sure we get this one right, because it's a simple one, but it really sets a tone for how a team will move forward. So let's talk about my first week of the season. I was scheduled to work three games last week. One of them got rained out. One was a JV game. One was a varsity game. I started my season with a JV game. I got to work with one of my best friends, Mark, who, again, I will talk about the guys that I work with, the gals that I work with, because so many of them have become my dear friends. So if I work with you, I'm probably going to talk about you, not in a bad way, but just because I appreciate you. And again, some of you all are my best friends. We worked a JV game that was 31-0 after four innings. The coach for the team that was down thought that there was a federation rule that if you're down 15 runs at the end of the fourth, that the game ends. We had to tell the coach that, no, that's actually not correct, that's club ball, but it's actually 10-run rule after five complete innings. But if he agreed and the other coach agreed to end the game early, that we could do that. And so I went over to the other coach. Said, hey, they're talking about wanting to end the game early. It's 31-0. And the other coach was more than fine. The game was just over 2 hours for four innings. So it was a long game. You know, one thing that came up, you know, not just the blowout. And as I was behind home plate, I tended to stretch the zone a little bit. Strikes were not easy to find for the team that was down by 31 runs. But I had a coach come out to me between innings. It was an assistant coach. And he said, hey, is it okay if I substitute a player in the field and then I'm going to take him out at the end of this half inning, and as long as he doesn't bat, then that doesn't count as his substitute. Then he can go in for another player. And so at first I was kind of bewildered by the question. It's not one I get. So I said, well, tell me what you want to do. He said, well, I want to take a player from my bench, number four. I want to put him in for the right fielder. And then at the end of the inning, he's going to go out. The right fielder is going to bat in his designated spot. And then I'm going to take number four. I'm going to put him in for the left fielder. And I said, coach, that's illegal. You can't do that. And this coach was adamant. He was absolutely adamant that that was something he could do, that as long as the player that he substituted in did not come up to bat, then he could take the player out, put him in for another player, which is not correct at all. And so don't just believe me. I'm a firm believer that you need to keep receipts. So we're going to turn to Rule 1. Which is substitutions, Section 1, substituting Article 1. Here's the rule. After the lineup cards are official, prior to the game, the player listed as a pitcher shall pitch until the first opposing batter has been put out or has advanced to first base. In any other case, the substitute may replace a player when the ball is dead and time has been called. So that, all that tells us is that the first pitcher has to pitch to the first hitter until he's out or till he reaches first base. He goes on to say the umpire-in-chief shall record any reported substitutes on the lineup card and then announce immediately any changes to the opposing team. Projected substitutes are not allowed. In each of the following situations, the ball is declared live by the umpire-in-chief. Should there be no announcement of substitution, a substitute has entered the game when the ball is live. And if you go to subsection C, it says a fielder replaces or reaches the position usually occupied by the fielder who has been replaced. Read that again because I messed up on it. A fielder reaches the position usually occupied by the fielder who has been replaced. So the moment that, let's say, number four comes off the bench, he goes onto the field and right field, and the right fielder, number two, has left the field, he has become the sub. Four goes in for number two, gets to the legal position, number two goes off, four has become the sub. Now, this is important because number two, the player who's sub four, because he's a starter, he gets to go back in one time. But the moment that four leaves the game, he's done. He cannot be a substitute for number eight, the left fielder. So I told the coach this rule. He said, "Are you sure?" And I said, "Yeah, I'm sure, but I'll go talk to my partner." Again, my partner is Mark. Mark is one of the rules interpreters for the entire state of Washington. I went over to him and said, "Mark, here's the situation. I don't think this is legal, but I, you know, again, trying to be courteous to the coach." And Mark goes, "No, that's illegal what the coach is doing." So between innings, I went over to the coach, said, "Hey, coach, just so you know, me and my partner conferred, and you can't do that." And he said, "Are you sure?" And I said, "Well, you see my partner Mark down there? He's a state rule interpreter. If you want to go ask him, you're more than welcome to." And he walked down to Mark. Mark, again, told him what the rule was. So, you know, it's kind of funny that in a JV game, you're down 31-0 and you want to get into a debate, not an argument, but he had questions about the rules. For me as an umpire, it's kind of weird because maybe we need to be focusing on other things. My second game was a varsity game on Friday night. It was an incredibly good game. It was 5-1 for most of the game. In the bottom of the sixth inning, the home team came back. In the bottom of the fifth inning, the home team came back, made it 5-3. In the bottom of the sixth inning, they went up 7-5, and then they ended up winning the game 7-5 as they retired the other team in the top of the seventh. I did have two ejections for unsportsmanlike language, one on each team, one on each batter. It was the bottom of the fifth inning. There was two outs. There's runners on second and third. An outside pitch that I had in the zone, I rang up the player. He dropped his bat. He pointed with his hand to the location which he thought I missed the call. He turned to me and said, "That's bullshit." And I said, "Maybe." And I took a step and very nonchalantly, I ejected him. The coach came out and he said, "Completely okay with the ejection. Just want to know what he said." And I said, "Coach," he said, "that my strike call was bullshit." And the coach goes, "Yep, that's worthy of it." In the bottom of the seventh inning, or the top of the seventh inning, the away team is down by 2 runs at 7-5. They just gave up 4 runs in the last 2 innings. There was runners on second and third. Two outside pitches on the outside part of the plate. I had them both as strikes. I rang up the batter on the third strike. He turns as he's going to the dugout and says, "That's fucking bullshit." And I said, "Maybe." And very nonchalantly, ejected him. The one thing that I wanted to make sure we got right is on the second ejection, when you eject a player after the final out has been made, that ejection still stands. So here in Washington State, if you get dumped the following game, you're not going to be able to play. So remember, as high school officials, as high school umpires, we have jurisdiction of the baseball field until we leave. And so if at the end of the game, a coach does something that is worthy of an ejection, we still need to eject him. I know a lot of times we want to try to get out of there, and I'm not saying that you go looking for trouble or you trouble, but remember, if there's something like a player telling you that's fucking bullshit on a strike, that's worthy of an ejection, and we need to do that, because if we don't do that at the end of the game, the kid's going to think that it's okay. So those are my two games. The things that I took away from it, and I got to work with a great guy named Dave, and I asked him about my zone. He said that the two pitches, the last batter, the two pitches were in the exact same location. So he didn't understand why that kid was upset about that. He did mention something to me, which is really helpful. He said, you take a lot of time to administer the game. He's like, I need you to be more effective with your substitutions. So try to keep the delays very minimal when a substitution comes in. If a coach is substituting someone for their right fielder, they say 1-for-4. I have the bad habit of pulling out my entire lineup card. I find number 4 in the subs. I put them in number 1, and it just takes a lot of time. It's really clunky. What Dave does, which I really like, is he just kind of remembers a mnemonic. If there's only one sub, or he'll write down on his piece of paper a 1/4, and so that between innings, then he can pull out his card and put the substitutes in. Now, Dave told me, and I think this is really a good point, if there's more than one sub, then obviously he's going to take a little bit more time. He's going to write them down. But if there's only one sub, wanting to keep up the pace of play, he either writes it down really quickly or he does some sort of mnemonic. He encouraged me to use shorthand or, again, like we talked about, mental tracking to save time with substitutions. The second thing that I need to work on, which is more the administrative side of baseball, is just making sure that there is someone ready to warm up the pitcher. There's a couple times where the catcher wasn't ready, and so we waited 30 seconds, a minute and a half before anyone came out and started warming up the pitcher. So I can do a better job of saying, hey, we need someone grab a glove, warm up that pitcher. Also, a new trend that we're seeing here in Southern Washington is that pitchers will be on the mound and they do like this hop, step, throw thing. I wasn't counting the hop, step, throw towards home plate as a pitch, but from what I've been informed by Dave, if you're on the mound and you're throwing, that counts as a pitch. So there's a couple times where between innings it got a little bit long, or if they were subbing, it just took me too long to write down the subs. So those are the things going into this week that when I work behind the plate, especially for varsity level games, I just want to make sure I'm efficient and getting my substitutions down. I want to make sure that there's someone to warm up the pitcher, and I want to do my best not to break up the flow of the game. The biggest thing that Dave told me is that sometimes when I took too long, it broke up the flow. It broke up the pace of the game. And as I've told anyone who knows baseball, there's nothing better than a great baseball game. There's nothing worse than a very slow baseball game. So those are the things that I'm going into this week thinking about, wanting to get better about. Because again, umpiring is a craft. It's something that we work hard at, and I want to be the best umpire that I can. So let's get into a quick segment, education segment about charged conferences. Now, this is a rule here that a lot of coaches last week have been asking me a question about. Remember, charge conferences are pretty simple. A team gets three charge conferences per game. They get three charge conferences per game. Now, starting on the fourth charge conference, they have to substitute the pitcher. So a coach is allowed to come out and talk to his pitcher. He's allowed to come out to talk to his right fielder. He's allowed to talk to anyone on defense a total of three times. Now, this is where coaches get confused. A substitution, a pitching substitution, does not count as a mound visit or as a charge defensive conference. So let's say in the first inning, you have your first pitcher, you have a mound visit, you have a charge conference. In the second inning, midway through the second inning, the coach decides to sub that pitcher out. So he goes out there and he subs him. That doesn't count. Even though he's been out to the mound twice, we only have one charged conference. So he changes the pitcher midway through the second. That's a substitution. Doesn't count as a conference. So then he comes out again in the third inning. That's his second charged conference. The fourth inning, he comes out and he subs the pitcher. That's not a charged conference. That's a sub. So the coach has been out a total of four times to the mound, but he's only been charged two conferences. So the fifth inning, he comes out. That's his third conference. Now, normally, at the second conference, I'll just say, hey, coach, that's your second conference. So the sixth conference, or sixth inning, no matter what, because he's taken a charge conference in the first, the third, and the fifth, when he comes out for a charge conference or for a sub, it doesn't really matter because he's had his max number of charge conferences. Now, on the offensive side, as an offense, you get one charge conference per inning. And if you make a request for a second one, I'm not going to give it to you. So let's say your first batter, he swings at a bad pitch, you call a charge conference. Then for the rest of the inning, you can't come out again. But in the second inning, let's say it's your third batter, you come out. You don't get a charge conference on the offensive side. Now, you can hope that they take a defensive charge conference. But again, for offense, you get one charge conference per inning. One thing that we should clarify, though, injuries do not count towards your charge conferences. If a player gets hurt, it's just an injury timeout. We just call time, let them deal with it. We're not going to penalize. So again, let me read the rules for you real quick. Rule 3, Section 4, Article 1. Each team, when on defense, may be granted not more than three charge conferences during a seven-inning game without penalty to permit coaches and their non-playing representatives to confer with a defensive player or players. In an extra-inning game, each team shall be permitted one charge conference each inning while on defense without penalty. The number of charge conferences permitted is not cumulative. A request for time for the purpose shall be made by a coach, player, sub, or attendant. Time granted for an incapacitated player shall not constitute a charge conference. Prior to accumulating three charge conferences in a seven inning or less, a conference is not charged if the pitcher is removed as a pitcher. So what's that rule say? It's really simple. You get three defensive conferences in a seven-inning game. And for every extra inning you go into, you get one charged conference. After that, you got to remove the pitcher. For offense, you get one an inning. And a injured player does not constitute a charged conference. All right, y'all, I've gone on for close to 20 minutes this week. I'm so thankful that you have come to join me. If you are still here and you are looking to get into umpiring baseball in the Vancouver, Washington area, please reach out and let me know. You can also check out our Facebook group, Evergreen Baseball Umpires Association, then send us a Facebook message and I'll get the information to you. So I hope you guys have a great week. I hope you guys enjoy whatever games you're working, and we will talk real soon. Take good care.